What a great way to start our reflections on the tournament with Craig Tiley by welcoming him along and talking through 2.5 hours of awesome tennis. Craig, always great to have a chat to you on Grandstand, and what a way to start the chat by reflecting on one of the better women's singles finals that we've seen at Rod Laver Arena.
No, absolutely. It's a privilege to be here again and to be at the end of the three-week extravaganza of tennis here in Melbourne and to have a culmination on the women's side of that match. I don't think I've seen a better match on Rod Laver on the women's side of the game. And, you know, two of the best players right now in the world, they were the best players coming into this event, and they certainly proved it. And we didn't know until the very end who was going to get over the line. And certainly for the first-time champion, Arena, she was so happy. And I know she only got about an hour's sleep last night.
Well, it was, from a local perspective, never going to have the build-up or the gravitas of Ash Barty from a local perspective. But just how did you feel the gravity of the night when you've got two of the young stars, a first-time major winner, and a large group of the original nine there, which did so much for women's professional sport, let alone tennis, and Billie Jean King presents Daphne's Cup?
Well, I think there were many special moments, and how hard it would have been to top Ash Barty winning and having the surprise presentation of Yvonne last year. And from an Australian perspective, there could have been nothing better. But then last night, from a global perspective, it's been watched by millions around the world, and it has been hailed, as we woke up this morning, as one of the better women's matches we've seen in the Grand Slam final. And I think as you said, with the realization that this is the young and up and coming talent of the future. Both have absolutely beautiful personalities, and both absolute pleasure to deal with. Their teams are incredible. And so, you know, the future of the sport is in great hands if we can have people, individuals like that, continue to showcase their great talents. And last night was one of those moments. And I think, that was added with having Billie Jean present the trophy. And she was down here with seven of the original nine, and those were the trailblazers. And our own Judy Dalton and Kerry Mulver Reed, and they were the trailblazers of women's professional tennis back in '73. If they hadn't took a dollar and then became professional players and then got banned from amateur competition, now if they hadn't have done that, we wouldn't have the women's tour as we see it today. And so, incredible amount of gratitude for them from all the players, and they were thanked again. And it's just really neat to have them from around the world, have them all here. And in Melbourne.
Craig, I'd imagine nothing's going to be as tough as the tournament of 12 months ago, but now that we're getting to the end of the 2023 Australian Open and you reflect, what's been the toughest part of the tournament for you this year?
I think it's having the event. The last time we had a full event was 2020, and now we're 3 years later and we have another full event. Like every business, there's a lot of new staff that joined us, so their first experience, and we don't know where the numbers are going to be yet. We have to find out later today, but I'm almost certain we'll have a record. And to have a record with Nadal losing earlier, without Roger and Serena, with the top Australians being injured, with no China visitation, with a full day of rain, a day of heat, will be an incredibly remarkable accomplishment. But I think the thing I've come to realize year on year with this event, it's got such global significance that it does become a platform and platform for people to attempt to be disruptive or to make a statement. And so that's something we've always got to be vigilant about. But I think our team's done a magnificent job of not letting that happen. And we have it our challenges, but that's normally expected when you have as many people as we have come on the site for 3 weeks and really, for the most part, nearly 100% of the people really behave really well and do a great job. But this year, the difficulty was dealing with all the variables we had with the weather, I think, and at the beginning of the event when you've got so many matches to play and to try and get them in. But at the end of the day, it all worked out fairly for everyone. It took us about 5 days to catch up. And once we got to that point, it was really fair for everyone. And it ended up with great tennis.
Australian Open boss Craig Tiley with you on Grandstand with Quentin Hull through ABC Sport. Now, Craig, on the reflections of the issue around the Russian and Belarusian flags, is there any reflection where you would have perhaps brought in the rules before the tournament instead of making that announcement just before we really kicked off, because that was perhaps the quite obvious destabilising factor which you spoke about. Are you happy enough with the way you handled that?
Yeah, look, I think it's a really good question. It's always easy for us to, you know, in hindsight, to evaluate and assess. But we've always been an event where that we want our fans to come on site and have a good time. And you know, and we don't want to be an event where you've got to wait for hours at the entry because you've got to be searched. Every part of you in your bag's got to be searched for something. So because we, you know, because we are as a sport going public, our patrons that come to the Australian Open are great people, and they behave and they want to do the right thing. And you know, do you want to have your patrons go through that experience when it's, you know, only one or two people that are going to ruin it for others? But what we had been clear on from the beginning is if you do anything that's disruptive to anyone else, then we will take action against you or what you did. And in this case, you know, you think that people are going to come on site and do the right thing and not display or use Russian flags to disrupt other players or other fans. And in this case, on Monday, there was a fan that placed a Russian flag right over the court where there's a Ukrainian player playing, and we wanted to protect the Ukrainian player in that instance. So we said immediately, it didn't take long. We said, okay, well, we gave you a chance, like we do with everything. We gave you an opportunity. We had confidence in good behaviour, and you didn't do it, so we banned the flag.
Yeah, and Craig, you're obviously just someone who's trying to run a tennis tournament. The political situation is, in Europe is not of your doing. And at the same time, though, you've probably been at the forefront of it for tennis at the start of this new year. So what advice would you give the tournament directors of the other slams as to how to handle this continuing divisive issue in world sport and tennis?
Well, it's another good question. I mean, and you know, for example, the swimming championships, the world swimming championships that we had here in Melbourne just before the Australian Open, you know, didn't ban Russian flags and didn't have an issue. So every event's different. Obviously, when you talk about a grandstand, you're talking about a really big, major global event with, you know, with a global audience for a long, long time. So I do talk to the other tournament directors, and the advice I would give is that, you know, if you, the more prohibitive you become, the more challenges you have, and the more likelihood you're going to have people just challenging that to breach them, and then you have issues. So if there's a way to manage it where you don't you don't have ongoing prohibition on everything, where you can't really do anything. However, I would like the tennis world to support the Ukrainian athletes more, because I spent a lot of time with the Ukrainian athletes, and I actually learned a lot about their situation as well. And the biggest one is that there's no Ukrainian can go home. They've got no home to go to. So when they're traveling around the world playing tennis, they just have to go to the next city to play tennis. And the other athletes, we can all go home. So I think we've got to be more conscious of that. And I'd like to see the tennis world, and maybe in other sports, every week with a Ukrainian athlete, that tournament to support that athlete financially all the way through until the next week. And I think that would be a really great thing for a sport to do, and I'd certainly be encouraging our sport to do that. We did that for the 3 weeks they were here. And I think just because they can't go home. So I think we've got to do things like that and be more focused on supporting those that are victims of this war, the Ukrainians, and we're going to do as best as we can to help them through these tough times. But we don't support banning Russian athletes, and you know, they compete as individual competitors, but we do support them not being able to compete as part of a Russian team.
Yeah, and that being said, you've had the frontline example of a Belarusian having her name engraved on the Dapnyakhurst Cup last night, but no country notification next to her, and even Victoria Azarenka feeling uncomfortable. So that balancing act, the individuals who are not a part of government policy, but you've got to try and balance that. And this is in no way a support of the regime, but are the individuals themselves, what role do you and the rest of the world of tennis have to play to try and still ensure that these players that are competing as individuals will feel welcome in some sense at the tournaments that do allow them to play?
Well, I think again, there's the first and foremost, as I said earlier, we need to support the Ukrainian athletes more and do a better job with that across the board in our sport. And then secondly, I think we need to be conscious that the Russian athletes and the Belarusian athletes are also struggling with this situation. They just happen to be from that country. Everyone I've spoken to are against the war. You saw Andrei Rublev has even written on the camera lens, "No war." They all have family back in Russia, so it's always dangerous for them to come out, and they have come out and be outspoken against the war because I'm sure it puts their family at risk as well. Their mental health and well-being also needs to be monitored, because at the end of the day, they are out there just competing as tennis players. And they've not been part of any of this terrible situation and massive issues.
Yeah, Craig Tiley from the Australian Open with us. Craig, is Novak's dad coming tonight?
Still early to say. We're still talking with the family. We make the assessment based on what's in the best interest from a safety and security point of view. And again,
is
you know, any
welcome to come along,
to
Craig.
He hasn't breached any event policy, and so from our perspective, that's going to be up to him, and that's his decision. But obviously, you know, we're at the final stage of the tournament. We're going to have a lot of active fans on site. And we're just reminding fans: if you're coming on site, like those individuals did with the Russian flag, and that if you're coming on site to be disruptive, you're not welcome, and we'll remove you.
But if he wants to come, he can sit in Novak's players box tonight.
It's going to be up to him, yeah.
Yeah, okay. A few other issues to raise, Craig. Do you think there'll be any conversation when you do an assessment of the tournament? Will anyone raise the possibility of a curfew at the Australian Open?
There's been a lot of conversation on scheduling. It's not a new one. It's not just this year. We've only twice in the last 15 years finished after 3 a.m., but that's still late. And we've had matches finish at 1 or 2, and it's still late. So yeah, never an ideal situation for the athletes, the staff, the patrons, or anyone. But the nature of it is we have two matches at night. And now the danger is if you have one match at night and that match has a default or finishes under an hour, your patrons are not going to get their value, their money's worth. So
we're aware of those things, Craig, but the question is, will you entertain a curfew at all? If you're not,
yes,
you can just tell us.
Yes, we're happy to entertain a curfew, absolutely. We're happy to entertain anything that helps the athletes feel like there's a better opportunity with the schedule. But I can tell you, in floating curfew with the athletes, there's violent disagreement on just imagine if you're a player and you're down and you come back and you're even and now you've got all the momentum going away and you got to stop because of curfew. Andy Murray has been outspoken against the curfew against Wimbledon. And so, because they have a curfew because of the community on the lights. So yeah, we'd entertain that. We have no problem entertaining that. As I've said to the players before, there's a certain things we cannot do. We cannot start earlier because we have a day session, unlike others that don't have a day session. So we cannot start earlier because day session. We can try and shorten the matches by maybe having no less or no warm up or the time between points, but that'll be a rule for the sport. The issue is a lot of the players are also the time between points is now so much longer than it used to be, and then we can have a curfew. There's quite a few options we can entertain to try and shorten it, and we'll work with the. We have been considering for a couple of years now to only have two matches during the day on Rod Laver and not three. And that may be something that we look at. So we'll always look at it. This is not a new discussion. It's been going on for a while. And interestingly, the length of points the last 5 years has only increased 0.2 seconds year on year. So it's hardly any increase in the length of points. It's the length of matches that have increased because probably the shot clock is made. And since we introduced the shot clock, players are taking all the time, which is more than it used to be.
Yeah, a whole 25 seconds. And I must admit, Craig, it was a perfect storm, so to speak, in that first week when you had hot weather and then you had the rain. And the one thing I will ask, having been a long-time attender of the Australian Open, there was only ever one night match on Rod Laver Arena. And then you brought in the one-man singles on the old number one court, which became Margaret Court Arena. And now there are more night matches scheduled. Is that ever going to change? Because you are actually opening the probability of later finishes because you just have more night matches now.
Yeah, look, at there's always been two night matches over the last 20 years, and what's changed
on the other courts? I'm talking about the new Show Court Arena and Margaret Court Arena has more night matches now, doesn't it?
Yeah, so MCA, there's a lot of things that on MCA and other courts we've done two matches, and we start 45 minutes earlier than we used to. We start at 7, right, following the news, So we also do it in the athletes, though, to protect them. Because if you put more matches outside and you have weather like we had, where you have rain and you have heat, those matches outside are now delayed for 1 or 2 days. So those players are significantly disadvantaged. So there's many of the players that want us to put as many matches on the stadium courts where we can close the roof and continue play as possible. Because if you're a player and you play on that court and you get your match finished, and another player is playing on the outside and you cannot finish it and you're your opponent, they have no rest and you have rest, and there's a significant disadvantage. And I know from a professional player point of view, they want the equity of when matches finish, so everyone has the same amount of rest, and often that's forgotten when we do the scheduling. And that comes from the playing group themselves. So often this feedback on how we schedule things is not necessarily purely a tournament decision. This comes from feedback from the playing group as well.
Craig, you've been generous with your time. I just got two more points that I want to ask you about.
Sure.
Firstly, the dip in television audience domestically, it's been an interesting one because of the big names that didn't turn up, the retirement of Ash Barty. And I know it's a very domestic question, but Big Bash has some of its big names back, and the cricket v tennis battle for eyes in late January, it's been a swing cricket's way this year. Is it concerning for you?
No, because I don't think it's been a swing cricket's way, because it's an audience share that's really important for us. I think Nine have demonstrated that they pretty much smashed the audience share for the 2 weeks, and that's what's really important to us, and that's really important to our audience. And as you mentioned before, that is a domestic question. We're a global event, and what's really important to us is how many people around the world are watching this event, including in Australia. It's really hard to beat the Ash question and the Ash success, because she's Australian. I can guarantee we get an Australian back in the finals. That could change, but I think across the board, free to air is declining, and that's why, you know, for us we have like Nine now and other digital platforms that continue to grow, and I think that this is an ongoing change, but we're very happy with the outcome that we've had this year and the matches we've had this year. With our global reach, we're up double-digit percentages again in China, again in the US, and the audience share in Australia has been really, really strong and has been the winner over anything else, and that's what's most important to us.
And you've been around tennis for a long time, Craig. Remember when the BBC and Tim Henman sort of decided that because they pulled the lid off the can of tennis balls, the Slazengers at Wimbledon, that prevented Tim Henman's chances at Wimbledon because it took the pop out of the balls. Now, these Dunlop tennis balls have been a discussion point. When do you de-can your tennis balls? Is that the reason they're not as fizzing as they used to be?
I always laugh at Tim. To this day, Tim's a good friend. I always laugh at that comment with him. But it's a very scientific process and technical one. And you know, I'd probably sit here and, and bore your audience if I was to talk too much about it, but because there's a lot that I don't know on it either, other than the fact that the balls were exactly the same. In the measurement of the balls, they were the same as last year. And what really was different this year were the conditions. You know, we had, in one day, we went from cooler rain conditions to extreme heat and flipped again to rain. So those would be a contributing factor. But really, you know, every year at the end of the event, we go and do a debrief and have a look and see what can be done differently.
Do they actually decan them when they're about to be used, or are
yeah,
they all?
Yeah, they all at the same time.
That was the problem at Wimbledon, because they did it, you know, pre-matches, and early. They thought it took the fizz out of the ball. So anyway,
yeah, they did it early. This happens just as they're about to be used, so it's all done at the same time.
Yeah. Okay. Look, thanks so much for your time. I know it's been an amazingly busy tournament. I hope you get an outstanding women's doubles final and men's singles final tonight. Craig, it's always appreciated
Thank
that the problems of the world of tennis come to your doorstep this time of year, and thanks for your grace in answering the questions.
Anytime. Always good to have a chat.